Hello, podcast listeners. This is Dr. Fred Rivera from the Center for Firearm Injury Prevention, and very pleased today to have with us one of our research scientists at the center, Dr. Esprit Little-Quinton. And she has recently published a paper named Black Women's Experiences at the Intersection of Firearms and Intimate Partner Violence, which was published in the Journal of Family Violence. So welcome, Dr. Little-Quinton.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, so what was the background for the study? Why did you do it?
That's a great question. So intimate partner homicide is a growing problem in the United States. And when you look at who's most affected, we're seeing that Black women are disproportionately impacted. And Black women make up about 13% of the population, but they account for roughly 31% of female intimate partner homicide victims. And when an argument turns deadly, Black women are about twice as likely as white women to be killed with a firearm. We also know from the broader literature that firearms are involved in the majority of intimate partner homicides. Right. And that if an abuser simply has access to a gun, that alone raises the risk for homicide by 500%. And that's a really huge number. I really wanted to focus on who were the Black women that were almost killed with a firearm by a partner, what their experiences were like, how did they make sense of it, and even how they actually navigated leaving that relationship and even building a life after leaving that relationship.
So how did you find the participants and how did you select them?
Yes. So those participants, we actually recruited 29 Black women from between August 2023 to May 2024. And all of those participants actually resided in the Northeast of the United States. So our recruitment approach involved a really multi-pronged approach using social media advertising. We actually also communicated with and connected with domestic violence organizations to get the word out through their networks. So people could have called in and completed that screening survey verbally, or we even intentionally selected people with specific criteria. So for folks to be eligible for this study, they needed to identify as one being Black, African-American, Black immigrant, and they needed to live in the United States, and women needed to, more importantly, self-identified as having experienced what we called in our study almost fatally harmed, which essentially means that women describe themselves as nearly being killed by an intimate partner with a firearm. And all of the women that we interviewed had to already have left the intimate partner relationship at the time of interview. So from this recruitment effort, we ended up with a really nice and diverse group of women. The Black women were from different educational levels, different income brackets, different relationship types. They were dating partners, like fiancés. We interviewed spouses. We interviewed even those who were cohabitating. And one of the things that really struck us from this these findings is that 82% of those participants we recruited, they actually disclosed that they were almost killed three or more times while in the relationship. So this statistic really tells us that this is not really a single experience of women almost, Black women almost being killed by an intimate partner. For most of these women, this was sustained and a repeated reality for them.
And we know that intimate partner violence is a recurring problem among these women. It's not a one-time event usually.
No, definitely. It's really a repeated event. There's definitely coercive control that's happening where there are these subtle repeated incidents that really harm women, and women are really threatened and coerced at different points in their relationships. Yes.
So can you tell us what the major themes were that you found for these interviews?
Yes. So we interviewed Black women and we analyzed the data and really learned that most of the Black women did not actually know that there was a firearm in the home at first. They actually found out either because the abuser told them, or they discovered the firearm accidentally, or they even found out because it was used or brandished against them. And almost every woman in our study told us, I never thought he'd actually use the firearm against me or on me until he did. There were several circumstances that we learned about that actually shaped intimate partner using a firearm against the women. Women told us that the intimate partner used a firearm during arguments, moments of jealousy or possessiveness, when she tried to fight back or even resist, or even when she tried to leave, or even during a divorce or separation, the firearm was used in non-fatal ways to threaten or coerce her. And we actually also learned that there were several reactions after this firearm was used. Women talked about being in shock. They were in disbelief. They described it as like a movie-like detachment from what was happening. There was anger, fear that this person they loved used a firearm against them. And this led Black women in our study down a few paths. Either some of the women left immediately. They tried to stay safe by complying with the partner's requests, or they even sought outside help, or they just tried to process that trauma in real time. Since this person that they've spent time with actually used a firearm against them, and then there was also reconciliation. We noticed that women in our study actually returned to their partners after receiving apologies, after the abuser framed the gun, and this is very was very interesting to us. After abusers framed the gun as, I have this gun for protection against someone else who may try to harm them. In these relationships, we saw there was a real investment in the relationship that really made leaving harder. And we even know from the literature that there are several barriers to leaving. And even after women finally decided to leave the relationship, they were still co-parenting with that abuser, or some women cut off communication entirely. Some women tried to go to therapy or even tried to rebuild a support system because of some of that isolation they faced in the relationship.
Did any of the women try to get an extreme risk protection order against their intimate partner?
So the women talked about it to some extent, getting an extreme risk protection order. But when we listen, know about extreme risk protection order, we recognize that first of all, there's the domestic violence protection orders, both protection and prohibitions that could have those firearms removed. There's those stay-away orders that come with DVPOs. There are different mechanisms, and ERPOs is not really meant to replace domestic violence protection orders. So women can definitely use DVPOs to try to get those partners to not be within a certain proximity to them and try to get those firearms relinquished from their relationship. So we didn't dive into that too much in our study, but those are certain mechanisms and policies in place that women who are within relationships can definitely utilize to ensure that the firearm gets relinquished.
Was protection of their children or other family members a theme that you found as one of the reasons that the woman left the relationship?
So from the literature broadly, we know that that's one of the barriers for leaving, having children within a relationship. Some women want to stay within, remain within the relationship because they would want that child to have, continue to have a parental figure within their lives. And it's difficult for some women, even immigrant women, to leave those relationships when they're relying on their partners for immigration papers. That also then becomes a challenge. So they're thinking about the well-being of their children and even themselves. So all of those considered with other systemic barriers for Black women, there's racism, there's barriers to seeking help when they're not believed within when they seek help. So these are all known barriers within the literature that I want to uplift and highlight for women finding it challenging to actually leave an intimate partner violence relationship.
So, what are the implications of your research for practice and for public policy?
For our practice, first of all, I think from this study, we're recognizing that education really matters here. And the women within our study really told us that their partners, again, have mentioned to them when they found out about the firearm within a relationship, that I'm using this firearm for protection against others, for community violence. And that framing can actually mask the risk of intimate partner homicide that could happen within a relationship. So there is an importance of educating women, especially in these high-risk relationships where firearms could be used. So on the practice side, there is very much an important element of having firearm-specific risk assessments that could be a part of IPV or intimate partner violence clinical screening. So when women are going to see their primary care physician, questions could focus on not just is there violence happening, but specifically asking women, is there a firearm in a relationship? Even going to the pediatrician's office, there are questions that could be asked about the firearms within the home and how is it being used? Is it being used as a tool to threaten and coerce? And of course, relationship building between the primary care providers or even clinicians is important to really elicit that information. Information and to learn more about women's intimate relationship with a partner who may have access to a firearm. There's also for practice, very broadly within the firearm literature, we learn and we know about safe storage, storing a firearm securely. Safe storage isn't really a complete answer in intimate partner relationships because the abuser could have access to a firearm. So encouraging the abusive partner to lock up a firearm safely doesn't really remove a threat within the relationship. Even an unloaded and securely stored firearm can still function as a tool of control by existing in the home. So we just want to be mindful about those things in practice and for when we think about firearms.
What about policy implications?
For policy implications, there's also the firearm relinquishment orders that we talked about earlier, DVPOs, domestic violence protection orders, that could be a really concrete lever. And actually removing access for someone under a domestic violence protection order could be really important. And it shouldn't be something that's just on paper that's ordered, but actually taking the next step to ensuring that these firearms are removed from those abusers who have acquired or have access to firearms. Of course, there's extreme risk protection orders where that firearm could also be relinquished, but we talked about that earlier. That's a second layer and it shouldn't be used to replace DVPOs. So but we still need a lot more research related to these DVPOs, especially for Black women, and to really understand how are these policies being utilized in practice and if implementation of these policies are really being rolled out across the country for Black women.
What are the implications for future research in this area?
For future research, I would point us in a few directions. One would be to actually have us apply more of an intersectional lens. I'm really digging into how race, gender, even socioeconomic status for those that are disproportionately impacted by intimate partner violence. And really understanding on how these different elements and characteristics are interacting with and shaping firearm-related homicide, particularly risk. There's also like protective factors. We want to actually find out like what is buffering risk. Is it community ties? Is it community violence intervention specialists who could actually play a role in being protective factors? Are they culturally informed interventions, trauma informed? Really want to look and really explore some of these different protective factors to see what's actually working. Are there like help-seeking behaviors? And really taking a deeper look, particularly at help-seeking behaviors, because when Black women are in these high-risk firearm intimate partner relationships, specifically, we want to really understand how women are navigating these high-risk relationships, how are they seeking help, and even how effective are those policies that we talked about, like the DVPOs and the firearm relinquishment orders, are they actually working for women, particularly Black women in practice?
Well, this has really been terrific. Is there anything else you want to mention before we stop?
I think one of the closing thoughts that I have for our listeners is that we really want to think about this gap between perceived risk and actual risk, and really think about how women in their study describe the firearm as a tool that their partner obtained for protection. I think that really stood out for me. But my partner has this tool for protection, and I didn't think that this firearm was going to be used against me. So we really want to see how we can educate and screen and even support Black women who are in these high-risk relationships that could potentially become lethal.
Thank you very much. We've been listening to Dr. Liddell Quinton of the Center for Firearm Injury Prevention, and please go to our website to look at other podcasts as well. Thanks very much.